Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
The other point, Mike, that I would make, especially it came through on the briefing from the federal experts, it's really important that we think about the language that we're using to talk about what we are predicting. Because, for example, it has moved from time to time from a Category 5 to a Category 4. It's important that we not emphasize that downgrading has happened because, in fact, the difference between Category 5 and Category 4 in terms of the danger and the damage is pretty much the same.
So it's always good when Kamala Harris is explaining to the Weather Channel about hurricanes. There's that. I think that there's a huge misstep from the Harris campaign on her picking a fight with Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis looks pretty BA right now. Mm-hmm. The way he handles the entirety of the Helene situation, of the Milton situation. He has been ahead of it, on top of it, in front of it, and he's there behind it as well. He has been in positive agreement with Joe Biden. Joe Biden has done what presidents should do. And I remember, it's funny to look at Joe Biden and be like, Ron DeSantis and all the other governors have done the things they need to do, and they're handling it very well. And if there's anything they need, they've got my personal cell phone number. That's what Joe Biden said. Remember when Minnesota was burning to the ground and Governor Walz was Donald Trump was telling that story about Tim Walz. And I think the audio of the call might have come out because Donald Trump was praising Tim Walz. Because Tim Walz finally decided to call in and use the National Guard. Am I remembering that correctly?
Well,
when Minneapolis was being set on fire in the riots?
Apparently the reason Trump says that he praised Walz.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, didn't Walz finally act on the National Guard?
I don't know when that was in the timeline.
Donald Trump was saying, Walz, you need to do this. 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 And he didn't do it. And everything continued to escalate. And then he finally did what Donald Trump told him to do. And then Donald Trump used that as an opportunity to praise Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota because Minneapolis was under siege, Donald Trump praised him for doing what he had been telling him to do the whole time. And he uses an opportunity to lift up Tim Walz. And then the Walz people, the Harris Walz people, were like, Donald Trump was praising Tim Walz. It's like when you listen to the whole thing, Donald Trump was being a leader and a nice guy in a bipartisan way, championing what Tim Walz was finally coming around to doing, which is what leaders do. Donald Trump did that to Tim Walz. You had a situation here this week where Joe Biden has done that to Ron DeSantis. But in the midst of all of this, Kamala Harris is like, but what about me? And everybody's saying, what is happening?
There's just a little bit of a news report going on in the background.
I was
going to
say,
somewhere.
I hear Donald Trump in the background. What's happening?
Oh, I had that on pre-fade listen. I was looking for the audio of the call.
Okay, well.
It played in your ears?
We heard it.
Oh. Refade listen.
Refade. do you have it?
Yeah.
Let's play. Yeah, we can play it here and listen to the actual conversation that took place between the two of them. You have it right now?
Yeah.
I know Governor Walz is on the phone and we spoke. And I fully agree with the way he handled it the last couple of days. I asked him to do that. And the whole world was laughing. 2 days, 3 days later, I spoke to the governor. The governor's, I think, on the call, and he's an excellent guy. You've got a big National Guard out there that's ready to come in and fight like hell. I tell you, the best, what they did in Minneapolis was incredible. They went in and dominated. And it happened immediately. Tim is on the phone now. Tim Walz, again, I was very happy with the last couple of days, Tim. You called up big numbers, and the big numbers knocked them out so fast it was like bowling pins.
So you have Trump. Pause that because we might go back to it. So you have Trump talking about like everything was. He says in there the world was laughing at us, and by us he's talking about Minneapolis, mm-hmm. because we're letting people burn our cities to the ground. We're letting the tantrum throwers. We're giving them, what did the Baltimore mayor say, space to destroy? Remember after the Freddie Gray riots, she was like, we're gonna carve out some space and let them lose their minds in this space. It's ridiculous. That was happening in Minneapolis as well. And what Trump is saying, once the National Guard got in there, they did the work that needed to be done. And he said, that he had been pushing on Tim Walz to do it. And he said, once they came in there and did it. And the left, when Walz was announced as the VP pick, the left was like, Donald Trump praised Tim Walz for the great job that he was doing. When you listen to that whole exchange, he was praising the National Guard more than he was praising Tim Walz. He didn't throw Tim Walz under the bus as much as he could have. And it's just another perfect example of, what would you call it? Misinformation that is put out there for the American people to consume, because the only thing that you're supposed to draw from listening to that is Trump praised Tim Walz.
Now, Trump has said, and I think he might have said this on Kilmeade recently after this audio was out there, that the reason that he even had this call and decided to go on record, which is what this is, and say, hey, Tim Walz is doing a good job, is A, what you just said, that he wasn't doing any of the stuff that he should do. He had decided to do it, but there were so many people that were mad at Tim Walz for not doing something sooner that Tim Walz, this is what Trump says, Tim Walz contacted Donald Trump and said, hey, I need you with your megaphone to get out there and tell people that I did that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, please praise me and tell everybody that I did it.
Trump said that.
That's what Trump said. Walz contacted him and said, I need your PR machine, basically you,
yeah.
to go out and say, hey, look, Tim Walz is good. He did the stuff. And that's where that came from.
Listen, Tim Walz was speaking there right when we intersected it. Let's dip in more and hear what Walz's response was.
The peaceful protesters were expressing an outrage that is real. They witnessed 8 minutes of a man dying in front of them. Well, at that point in time, I did something unprecedented. I mobilized the entire Minnesota National Guard, and that's what the president was alluding to with the size of the force was capable. But I think, again, Mr. President, you asked on explaining this, I would just say, it's going to be very difficult. There are bad actors in this, but there is such a legitimate anger. Our real dilemma here is the transition back is rise to the catalyst that sparked this across the country, and that was what happened with the Minneapolis Police Department. So what we did, a lot of this, what you saw yesterday, was engaging civic leaders and the peaceful protests. And I would just close with, I think the guidance is you got to get a handle on it with that force. That is absolutely correct. And then the transition in the next phase is trying to get those spaces for the peaceful protest. And I'm happy to do things that we have to look at of how do we get reforms.
But, Tim, it showed the incredible difference between your great state yesterday and the day before compared to the first few days, which was just...
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Bro hug. It's just utter destruction taking place, complete lawlessness taking place, and Trump's like, send in the National Guard. You know anybody there, Tim?
At that moment, Trump could have very well said, I am not going to do this for you because you've messed up, you're a Democrat, it would look bad for me politically.
Yeah.
He didn't. He took the call.
He's a leader.
That's what you do.
Kamala Harris continues to insert herself in the midst of this hurricane recovery thing. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, maybe get ish done there for the people in North Carolina who've been left behind, who are struggling. I heard on Fox News earlier today that there was a family of 11 people who were just killed in a mudslide. Mm. 11 people in one family just wiped out.
Wow.
Stuck in the mountains. Did you see the video of Dr. Phil? I don't know if I sent that one to you.
Oh,
no,
I saw that.
Dr. Phil was going and taking Starlink up into the mountains, and they're driving up the hill, and they're working to, you know, establish connectivity for these people who are in the mountains. And as they're driving up there, there's this 83-year-old woman, I think she was 83, just a little old lady who kind of shuffles out, and she's like, I don't want to be a bother to you, but would you be able to help me? I have no food, I have no water, I have no electricity, I have no, you know, functioning water systems in my home. She's all alone. And they were like, oh my gosh, yes, we can help you. So they set up everything they need in her house and they take care of her. And there are a lot of women like that. There are a lot of people like that that are still waiting for somebody to come by. Like, imagine you're stuck in the mountains and you're elderly and nobody's come to help you yet. And here comes Dr. Phil to save the day with Elon Musk's Starlink in tow. That's what it took for this woman. That's outrageous. There's no reason why Dr. Phil, weeks after the event, should be the one saving you with the help of Elon Musk and Starlink to make it possible. And I think that at the end of the video that I saw, Michaels, like the craft store, sponsored the video, which means that they're sending money and Dr. Phil into the mountains to try to help people. I mean, this is a great example of how the private sector is way more reliable than the government. Now, people are going to say, oh, so Annie's saying that the government, that if it hasn't happened yet, it's they're mid-typing right now. But the idea that Annie's saying that the government should have more resources and more capabilities. No, I'm saying they're incapable of doing it in a way that the American people can solely rely on, which is why we shouldn't have to turn over all of our hard-earned dollars to the federal government to do jack squat with it when the time comes for an emergency where you've got 83-year-old lonely women sitting up in the mountains just wait for Dr. Phil to show up. Like, what are the odds of that? That you were saved by Dr. Phil. At one point, they introduce her to Dr. Phil. They're like, you might know Dr. Phil from TV. And she goes, oh my goodness, yes. And she's like, everything you would expect. The sweet old elderly lady who is just like looking for a bite and a sip. And there's nobody there to help her. This is drastically showing the ineptitude of federal government to show up when the time of need arises and to be able to deliver in a way that is effective to save people. Those people who are paying their taxes are not being helped by their tax dollars. But the people in foreign countries, tax dollars go in there. The people who are coming here illegally are being helped by FEMA dollars. You can go listen to the 2022 clip that we played earlier from Corinne Jean-Pierre about how FEMA disaster relief is going to help feed and shelter migrants who are coming across our southern border. It's from their mouths. Fact check Corinne Jean-Pierre, not me. What was their I Love Ducey.
I Love Ducey.
Yeah.
Beverly Hillbilly Elegy.
How do we get that to KJP?
I'll just text her.
Okay.
I'll text. I don't want to.
If you're the one,
that?
If you're the one feeding her lines, everything's starting to come together for me.
Oh yeah, I talk in her ear all the time. That's half of what I'm doing. I'm not paying attention to this a lot.
Man, let's take a quick break. When we come back in about 20 minutes or so, we're going to speak with Robert C. Cahaley. Did you know that? chief pollster.
I did know that.
And founder of the Trafalgar Group is going to be on with us. They've got some new polls out. What is Mr. Cahaley and Trafalgar seeing taking shape with 26 days left to go in the election? We'll find out from him in about 20 minutes, but more on the Andy Fry Show next.
Baby's black balloon makes her fly.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I.
It's time for Pitch Hit and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Give the kids in your community a chance to flex their superpowers, and they could earn a trip to the national finals of the 2025 World Series presented by Capital One. So go ahead, be the one who powers their dreams, and sign up to host the local Pitch Hit and Run event. It's a free and fun way to promote baseball, softball, and your organization. To learn more, go to pitchhitrun.com.
I stopped an old man along the way, hoping to find some old forgotten words.
I think that when you approach a campaign like this entirely based on the assumption that the media can market you as some type of generational political talent, something that she's never actually shown herself to be, you're counting on a lot of people to make the case for you based on vibes, not on anything that you're actually going to do as president. That's why you see their change in strategy over the past week, where they've embarked on this media blitz to a bunch of friendly interviewers, trying to reshape and reestablish her as someone who is the face of the future, as someone who has momentum. I don't think she's been successful doing that. And I think that the blue wall that they once had is increasingly trending toward Donald Trump. And I don't think that they really have a plan to get their feet back under them in time to win in November.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. The YouTube live chat poll for today is, how do you feel about Election Day? Are you scared, excited, anxious, or confident? Got a lot of people weighing in on this. I want to read some of your thoughts and responses here. Paul said, is that from yesterday? Hold on a second. Jackie said, anxious. As of lately, I think the Harris-Walz team is stumbling a bit, but anything can happen. Jackie said, I'm with Annie. Worried, anxious, which is what I said I was. Brad said he was excited, anxious. Betsy, anxious. Amanda, I'm an excited, anxious, but I've said the exact thing that Ryan is saying. All great empires do fall at some point. I was just hoping I wouldn't be around for it. Relatable?
Oh my gosh, yes. I mean, it's the things, it's amazing that we're now in 2024 even talking about this. We shouldn't be in a place where we're talking about, well, are our best days behind us? We're the richest country in the world, the history of the world, and yet we're just squandering it. It makes you so mad.
And as far as like countries go, we're just a baby. The fact that like this would be the end is so abrupt and so fast. So it's
time
wild.
Doesn't move the same now, though, that it did before.
No, I don't know.
It's kind of like a dog year thing. Rome, when you think about dynasties that existed before, and you think about how, I mean, literally from one Sunday to the following Saturday, the world can look entirely different in that amount of time based on different interactions between different countries. We're watching Israel try to defend itself on a multi-front war, and you know, all the implications of all the people drawn in to that. We got Ukraine and Russia. The China-Taiwan thing is just like, that's just on the back burner for right now, but it's never left the stove. And then meanwhile, in America, of course, we look at American politics and American news as the leading story, and there's nothing wrong with doing that. Our lead stories are based on our election. Is it like this for other countries when it comes to elections? Do they go through and do elections the way we do? James Carville is a very, very staunch Democrat supporter. He's a campaigner. He is a pundit. But he's also tends to be a realist and very, very direct.
They need to be sharp. They need to be aggressive. They need to stop answering questions and start asking questions. They're doing all this and sitting down with 60 Minutes and sitting down with Colbert and sitting down. No matter what, if I come on your show, you're going to ask me the question.
So James Carville is really, I think, criticizing Kamala Harris's lack of preparedness for the most basic questions. I was asking this of Tim Murtaugh yesterday, and I think Harris Faulkner, when she was on with us, we talked a little bit about this as well. For Kamala Harris to be asked, you know, just basically, what's the difference between you and Joe Biden? And she's like, she pauses and thinks. She pontificates. She's like, can't really think anything.
Oh, gosh, I know. Amazing.
There are a million ways you can answer that question. That might have been the worst way.
That's like beach ball on a tee. Like, how could you miss that? That is setting you up to give you the promo for the view for the day is that question. And you missed.
Fox News is reporting that Vice President Kamala Harris's running mate, Democratic Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, remained silent Thursday on whether he still supports eliminating the Electoral College, after the Harris campaign insisted his position did not reflect that of the campaigns. So there's a little bit of division there. She can determine that she is different than Tim Walz on that, at least for the time being, you know, like when Pennsylvania is in play. According to Tim Walz, quote, I think all of us know the Electoral College needs to go. We need a national popular vote. Walz said that during a campaign fundraiser Tuesday. At the home of Democratic California Governor Gavin Newsom, Walz made similar comments at an earlier fundraiser in Seattle as well. While running for president in 2019, Harris said she was open to the idea of abolishing the Electoral College. However, according to campaign officials pressed on the issue following Walz's remarks, eliminating the Electoral College in favor of a national popular vote is not an official position of Harris's current campaign. It's shocking to me that they were in California discussing eliminating the Electoral College. Why would they be doing that?
It's just amazing because that's all of these positions, all of them, including that one, although they're not officially saying it, are so short-sighted. They are what gets me into power right now, what gains me a favor with a certain group of people right now, because the rest of the history of elections be damned. I think that right now the popular vote could go my way, so let's change the entire American system.
Fox News Digital reached out to representatives for Walz repeatedly to inquire whether he still supports replacing the Electoral College with a national popular vote, particularly after his campaign came out against it. A response was never received, but the Harris-Walz campaign did release a statement to certain news outlets suggesting Walz's remarks were intended to express support for the Electoral College process.
Okay.
Where's Minnesota? All 10 electoral votes as they have right now fit in with a 55 California electoral vote, 38 in Texas, 29 in Florida, New York, 29. Where's Minnesota going to fall in that? What In what world, where the election seems to be as close as it possibly can, which if you're looking at polling, and we're going to do that with the Trafalgar Group when we come up in the next segment with Robert C. Cahaley here on the Annie Fry Show, when the election looks super close, why would you insult those states by saying we're going to get rid of the Electoral College? Because that just means if you go by national vote, you just got to win California, Texas, Illinois, New York, Florida. That's about it. I'm looking here to see if there's anything bigger than that. And that's Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is 20 votes and Illinois is 20 votes. I mean, seems like a pretty politically stupid thing to say in a timely manner, regardless of whether you actually believe it or don't believe it. Like, there's nobody to pander to by saying that, where you're going to politically benefit from it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird thing because you have to do like think it through for it to make sense to you if you live outside of the major coastal areas. But what he's saying really, and what they're trying to do there, is not, oh, it'll skip Minnesota and it'll skip Iowa. It's that they want to make it all about cities. They want to be able to just have Minneapolis vote. They don't care about the rest of Minnesota. How about if just Minneapolis matters? How about if just San Francisco, just Chicago? That's the thing. That's the blue-red split right there.
Well, that's not totally what he's saying. What he's saying is I don't care about the people and that their stuff is, that their needs are met. I care that my party wins, and if we switch to a national popular vote, then my party has the best shot at winning because they do appeal to those cities. But even like Minneapolis won't really matter, because if you win like the major cities in California and New York, and you win Chicago, those are the three biggest cities, and then probably Houston, you've got to sewn up from there. There's like, I don't know that there's enough cities to add up to the number of votes that you would get from those places. He's telling the people what they want to hear so that they will vote for him, and he's looking for ways to make that group of people happy and to let them know, hey, we're going to lock our party in. Which is really ironic when you consider the fact that this is the party that's saying we're concerned about democracy. We want to save democracy, and what they're looking for is a way to lock their party in so that the Republicans can't ever gain control.
No, if you wanted to save democracy, that's exactly how you would save democracy. The problem is that we aren't a democracy. We're a republic, and the republic is exactly that. That's like the constitutional difference right there, is the idea that we aren't ruled by the majority in the United States of America. We're ruled by a document that we all agreed was I was going to say a bad word.
I really want to know what that word was now.
The poop.
Okay, gotcha.
Like, sounds better the other way.
What's going to be great is going back, if you're listening to the podcast, and inserting all kinds of different words there.
When the Constitution is what our country is adhered to, and that's the governing force, it's the Constitution that protects the people from the government. And if you have a democracy, then you have a majority rule. And if you wanted to save democracy and say, screw the Republic, you'd get rid of the Electoral College. That's what you would do. Maybe. Does he know that? He might.
Tim Walz might know that.
Did he learn that in China?
It's just another example of, we're the party of like law and order, and we just want to maintain everything. Trump's crazy, wants to change everything. The Democrat Party wants to change everything. Everything about the way the country is run, from the Electoral College to the number of states we have, to the number of Supreme Court justices, to the filibuster, the way the Senate votes. They want to change everything.
For what end?
Power. Their own power.
For themselves, which is, it's, democracy is much more easy to corrupt, as we were seeing it. Yeah, I mean, it'd be ironic, and it probably require too much explaining to be like, yeah, Donald Trump does want to end democracy. He wants to save the republic, yeah, if we can keep it.
Right.
I want to take a quick break here. We're going to connect with Robert C. Cahaley on the other side of this break. We're going to talk to him about the Trafalgar Group's latest polls. If you go to thetrafalgargroup.org, you can see them for yourself on the break. And we'll discuss the direction that Robert C. Cahaley sees this election going with 26 days remaining to go. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I just saw some new private polling today. That's very robust private polling. She's in a lot of trouble. Here's how I framed it this morning in my newsletter. The conversation I'm having with Trump people and Democrats with data are extremely bullish on Trump's chances in the last 48 hours. Extremely bullish. You think of the seven battleground states. Which ones is Harris in danger of losing? I would say Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona, North Carolina, and Georgia. I'm not saying she'll lose all six, but she's in danger. The only one that the Democrats say she's not in danger of losing is the one I never say the name of because I can't pronounce it. But it's where Las Vegas is, right? You guys agree with me. She could lose any of those six.
Nevada, I guess, is the question. You a Nevada or a Nevada guy?
Nevada.
Same. I wonder if it's wrong.
No, it's correct.
Nevada?
Yeah, that's how you say it if you're in Nevada.
Okay.
That's what they say.
That was Mark Halperin talking about internal polling that he has been hearing about, private polling, suggesting that Kamala Harris is in some trouble. And a lot of people are suggesting that her media blitz right now, all of a sudden she's out there. She's changed the course of her campaign. She's putting herself out there a lot more, that maybe that suggests that the status quo wasn't doing the trick. Well, we want to go to the expert on this, and we love having Robert C. Cahaley on the show with us. He's the chief pollster and founder of the Trey Falger Group. Robert, welcome back to the show. We understand you were in the wake of some of these hurricanes. It is great to have you on. We're glad that you're well. We hope that the recovery is going okay for you as well.
Well, I was blessed. I had lots of trees down, but none of them managed to hit a house. So. Not any complaints, but I would like to have internet again.
Yeah. I bet it's probably hard to be disconnected at this point. If you don't mind, Let's talk a little bit about some of the polling that's going on with the Trey Falger Group. You've got some polls out here recently, Georgia being the most recent. Just give us the 30,000 foot view of what kind of sentiment you're gathering right now with the research that you're doing.
Well, both Matt Towery and I have been dividing up the states and doing them. Matt Towery with Insider Advantage, he and I host a podcast together, Polling Plus. You should check it out wherever you get your podcast. Type in the word polling. But we have been looking at these different states, and the last two, I think we're the last two of three that have done Pennsylvania, and both of us found roughly a 2-point Trump lead in Pennsylvania. And since the second assassination attempt, we've seen an uptick. We were both actually in the field that night. And a Sunday evening, and with polls that had started a couple of days before, and it was the strongest night we'd seen for Trump in a long time.
Wow.
And so we think that we traced this uptick back to then and then successful vice presidential debate. But it's like when people begin a race, you know, we've seen these, you know, multi-candidate races. The new person always kind of has a newness and many times moves to first in the polls for a little while. You know, it's like that. And so Kamala got in this thing, and even though she was vice president, people didn't know a lot. And it kind of, she started with that almost generic feel to her of she could be molded or whatever, you know, you wanted her to be. And with Trump, you kind of knew what you were getting. You know, you knew what his weaknesses were. And so as the picture of her becomes more clear and she becomes more real, and people realize just how inconsistent she is and how problematic some of her answers are, she starts to kind of settle down to reality. And, you know, there's not a lot we're going to learn about Trump in the next 28 or so days that makes you go, oh, well, I didn't know that.
That's brand new information.
I mean, well, I would have never thought that. But, I mean, that's just not going to happen. But there's a lot of that with her. And especially this lady is on tape more than almost anybody I've ever seen saying kooky stuff. And it's hard to believe. But we're seeing her kind of settle back down and the enthusiasm of the Democrats settle back down. And so really the only groups that don't seem to be budging are many of the hardcore Never Trump Republicans and many of the suburban women who just don't like him.
Yeah.
And I've advocated for a long time. There is no sense in spending $10 trying to win a suburban woman who's never going to like Trump when you can spend $5 and make a huge dent with Hispanic voters, with Black voters, especially males under 50, with Gen Z voters. I mean, it's just a better, but you're not going to take someone who just viscerally can't stand Trump and make them change their mind. And it's a fool's errand.
Right.
And so I think that, you know, we've seen a lot smarter attention on that. And the Trump campaign is just, I mean, the campaign itself is doing a great job. I have a lot of quarrels about some of the outside groups and the idiocy of what they're doing. But the campaign and MAGA Inc., they've just done a great job. And their ads are really good. I mean, the one they're running during college football games about the transgender surgeries for prisoners is just spot on.
there on the market. That's interesting to hear. We've seen Kamala Harris go out and you know, as you're saying there, we're finding out new things about Kamala Harris every time she opens her mouth. And at the same time, she's also kind of fortifying some of those assumptions that people have had about her and her inability to articulate points and policies that really connect to the American people. Do you believe that their shift in being more out there and going on Stephen Colbert and The View and 60 Minutes and saying, okay, it's time, 26 days to the election, we need to be out there and in the public. Is that indicative to you of their own polling they're seeing, saying that what we're doing isn't working enough? Do you connect those two things at all?
I do. I think really if she'd been better prepared for The View and Colbert, those were good decisions. Not necessarily at the time during the hurricane, but 60 Minutes, I mean, they're just not going to throw softballs at you. And that guy sure didn't. I don't really watch 60 Minutes that much anymore, but that guy was pushing.
Yeah.
I mean, he was not letting her go with just silly answers. And so that probably wasn't her best move. But it's like, this is the Kamala campaign has been something that has been in many ways a well-oiled machine. You know, they've said exactly what they need to say. That, I mean, they prepared her very well for the debate. I mean, she studied what she was supposed to say, and she, you know, read it off from memory. And it's just like, I'm questioning, how can that campaign be the campaign that had her call into the Weather Channel? How can that campaign be the one that had her complaining that DeSantis wouldn't take her call? I mean, how is that campaign this bad all of a sudden?
Mr. Cayley, this is Ryan Wiggins. With Trump, you know, we've had two cycles, this being the third presidential cycle with him, which is pretty unique. You usually don't get three cycles with the same candidate. Is he still difficult to poll? Is it still difficult to figure out how to poll for Trump voters now the third time through?
It's actually more difficult this time than it was in 2016. 2020 was a little easier than 2016. And that's why, we were so spot on with an error rate of like, I think it was 2.4 in the 2020 race. But there's a different reason. In 2016, it was that they were hesitant to say to a live caller they were for Trump because they didn't want to be judged by that person. And I mean, that 2016, that's what we were dealing with. It was kind of a shy Trump voter. Now I would say it's a fearful Trump voter. They are concerned about who's doing this. What are you going to do with some information? Mm. Who are you giving this to? Yeah, you know, they've seen the weaponization of the federal law enforcement. They've seen this guy had two assassination attempts. I mean, the second one should have never gotten that close after the first one. But, you know, they've seen pro-life people praying in front of abortion clinics have their doors busted down by SWAT. They've seen a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And so whether what all the conspiracy stuff is real, it doesn't really matter if they think it is. If somebody thinks that, you know, almost like, you know how gun owners just really oppose gun registration because they know that that's the list they'll use to come get the guns?
Yeah.
Well, that's the way they feel about this. They're like, who's asking? What are you going to do with this information? They don't know who's polling them and why and what you're going to do with it. And it makes them very nervous. So I think we have a nervous or fearful Trump voter who is just hesitant to have their name on the list. And it's a different thing. And I found it already to be a greater margin than it was in 2016.
That's interesting. Robert C. Cayley is speaking with us right now, the chief pollster and founder of the Trey Falger Group. Also encourage you to subscribe to Polling Plus, the podcast right there, to get the latest on what Robert and his partner have to offer you. Are all the swing states still solidly swing states? Is there any state that you think is getting away from that category?
No, I'd say they're all kind of solidly swing states. I mean, North Carolina is one that, but for the hurricane, I would tell you probably was moving to the category of being solid. I mean, I always thought North Carolina was solid. I never believed the Democrat candidate for governor winning was going to drag the rest of the ticket, that the rest of the Republicans down, because, I mean, the Democrats won the governor in 16, and they won it again in 20, and Republicans won all across the ballot. I mean, even in 2022, the Republicans won a U.S. Senate seat and increased their margins in the state House and Senate. North Carolina is a Republican state that that because of maybe some bad candidates sometimes tends to elect Democrat governors.
Hmm. That's interesting. Do you feel as though that this is going to be a razor-thin electoral victory? Because with all of these different swing states being very close, you know, within the margin of error and so on and so forth, they all seem to be very winnable by either candidate based on the polling numbers. If they could swing all one way versus the other.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what's going to happen. I would say the one outlier is probably Nevada. I can see a scenario where all the swing states would swing toward Kamala, including Nevada, and I can see a scenario where all the swing states swing toward Trump, except Nevada.
One follow-up question on, you know, when you're polling Trump, because I'm very fascinated by this. It's such a unique thing that when you release your results with Trafalgar, how are you accounting for that? You know, because it sounds like it's a really tough thing to do. So then when you put your results out, how are you saying, well, here's how we accounted for it?
Well, right now, our results are simply what our results are. And we are measuring a hidden vote that's there, but it is not entering into the calculus of what we come up with. And part of doing that is just being cautiously optimistic to make sure. I mean, the one thing that everybody is going to accuse anybody on our side of the aisle of being in the tank for the Republicans. And, you know, you don't respect the pollsters that are in the tank for the Democrats. And sometimes the ones that are so in the tank for Republicans, you don't respect either, and we try not to do that. We tend to err on the side of Republicans, and that's just, you know, what happens. But we try very hard not to, and so we see a hidden vote. We are not accounting for it. I can see that it's there, and it gives me more confidence that they'll at least get to what we're showing, because I do anticipate a Democrat get out the vote machine that is unparalleled, that can be worth 2 and 2.5 points in some of these states.
Mm.
So the question is the hidden Trump vote bigger than that.
Yeah.
But I mean, if Republicans only win in Pennsylvania by 2.5, I don't think they're winning Pennsylvania at this point. And so, I mean, I know what to expect there. And, you know, whether it's just good old fashioned hard work, get out the vote, or other sorts of shenanigans, there should be preparation for it. And so we are looking at the hidden vote as kind of a counterbalance to that, so we don't have to actually put it in our numbers.
Real quick before we let you go, Robert C. Cahaley with us right now. Do you feel as though the Republicans have answered the 2020 question with a positive shift in their efforts to ensure that they do everything they need to do to get out the vote and to, you know, clean voter rolls? Do you feel confident in that, especially in the swing states?
I think they've tried, and they've done a great, valiant effort. But what you have to understand is the way Democrats and Republicans approach this is very differently. Democrats, one, there's not a lot of people within the Democrat system who are grifting. They are efficient, and they spend their money wisely, and they spend real money on grassroots. But Republicans, you know, save what the party's doing, some of these grassroots, quote-unquote, groups aren't really doing anything. They're just pocketing money, and they're just sliding along. I mean, there's so much of that going on in the public circle. And, you know, when Democrats grassroots effort, they talk about putting 300, 400, 500 people on the ground in the state. When Republicans say it, they're probably sent 30 people. It's just not the same thing.
Mm.
There is no profit for a consultant in grassroots, and that is why the Democrats are so much better at it than the Republicans.
Robert C. Cahaley, thank you for being with us. Encourage people to check out the Polling Plus podcast and stay up to date on all of your efforts. Thank you for being here with us. Continued prayers for the recovery after the hurricane. We really we value your time here. Thank you.
Hey, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Robert C. Cahaley is the chief pollster and founder of the Trafalgar Group on Twitter at Robert Cahaley. Go check them out there. TheTrafalgarGroup.org if you want to see some of those polls that we're talking about that they have recently deployed. We've got Annie, Are You Okay? back in studio with Trisha at 2:25. I'm pretty excited about that.
I can't wait. That's going to be great. Trisha's back.
Less work for us to do.
Yeah. Just get to sit back and kick our feet up for that one.
Yeah. You should have heard Wiggins America today if you didn't. He put a lot of effort into it.
Mm-hmm.
We're all raising the bar substantially now on Wiggins America.
Oh, no.
Annie, are you okay? In the next segment, hour. Don't go away.
My dad works in B2B marketing.
He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
This time of year, the gear means more. The logo has a season of grit stitched in. The hat brims go low. The jerseys blaze with postseason pride. It's postseason season. This is what players and fans wear to win. Visit MLBShop.com for your favorite team gear and today's special offer. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.